Welcome to Go Radio 35.Z.
That's close.
Yes. We're live at the Bowstar on Main Street, and we have another special guest, Tom Van Haren. So if anybody needs to be held, he'll be here for the next 20 minutes.
I'm here for the holding.
Yeah.
Yep. Do we have the bat signal on out there?
Has anyone ever actually come up to you and asked you to hold them?
One person has, yes.
One person,
yeah. When I lived in Royal Oak, I got recognized a little more. I live in Oxford now. It's an older crowd. I don't get recognized as much. But yeah, someone did. It was kind of like a surprise, too. So
I imagine it would be.
Yeah, they came up to me and they just looked at me and said, "Hold me, Tom VH." And I was like, really? Any other context would be really, really awkward.
Right.
But I got it.
Was there a recruiting battle going on at that moment, too? Or is it just a random?
I think it was probably just random.
It was just random.
Okay, it wasn't like "Hold me, Tom VH," Deshaun Hand, Mike.
No. This was just random. It was like their hello to me.
Okay. Did you hold them?
I didn't. I refrained from holding.
Okay.
Yeah.
So don't come up and ask him because he'll be weirded out.
Right.
So Tom, of course, used to work for MGO Blog back in the day.
I did.
When he was like, "Hey, I think Colin Christian's going to commit to Michigan," because he was talking about it on Facebook, and at the time, that was like a mind-blowing advancement in like deciphering things on the internet.
And then 3 years later, Colin Christian made his announcement.
That's true.
The most drawn-out announcement I've ever seen.
Yes.
I remember that one vividly. We were just talking about memories, and I don't remember anything. I remember that
one. You remember that one?
That one was crazy, yeah.
Well, of course you're like, all right, well, you need to like get this to like get your hit streak going.
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting time just because, like you said, no one was really using social media yet.
Right, so weird.
And that's really how everybody gets a lot of information. The kids are posting their own stuff now, and it seems like a natural progression, but at the time it was unusual.
Well, nowadays like people like look up who's following who on Twitter, like, ooh, this guy just followed Jay Harbaugh on Twitter. And
right, like the, oh, six Michigan coaches just got on this guy's follows.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then you got hired, of course, by ESPN and managed to survive several hundred bloodlettings.
Yeah, I don't mean to use the word joking, but I keep telling my wife, I keep getting promoted by layoffs, which I would like to get my own promotion at some point, yeah. But I'm happy to be around. And, you know, I've said this before, and I owe everything to you. You were the only one that said yes.
You did the work. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but this was, we talk about, if people are listening, we talk about me reaching out to you and working for you. I didn't have a portfolio. I mean, I was in advertising at the time.
No, you seem nice, though.
Right. That was the
main
thing.
Honestly, like, you know, a skill I don't have is like talking to teenagers and making them feel comfortable, or my wife. Like, it just doesn't happen. And you know, he has ability that I did not have. And it was a match made in heaven until ESPN. I told them what they should do, and then they hired you away, and I was like, come on!
I remember the guy that reached out to me was actually a Michigan fan, and he read MGO Blog.
Right, and he called me, and he's like, hey, what should we do? And I was like, well, you should try this out. And it was a disaster, and it didn't work, but they hired you away, so that was good.
Yeah, it was. Our site worked. It was, you know, ours, the Wolverine Nation.
Yeah,
that one worked. The other ones, unfortunately, did not. Then they consolidated everything, and just through Recruiting Nation, and then that got consolidated, and I'm really the only recruiting guy left, and I cover college football now, too. So, it's turned into a...
So that was you, was it Chantel? Who else was
Mike
it?
Rothstein.
And Mike Rothstein.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good team for covering Michigan.
We had a million-plus page views. I mean, we were doing really well. It was just, you know, unfortunately, the other stuff didn't work out, and they consolidated.
Well, that is kind of the story of Michigan things on the internet. Is like, this one's successful, and then I go, right. Mississippi State isn't pulling its weight.
Right.
As per usual. No, I have no problem with Mississippi State. So you have a book.
I do, yes.
I don't even have a book.
You don't? Oh, I thought you meant my book.
Yeah, your book.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you know what? This was kind of, we're talking about how I started and all this. This is kind of why the book got started. It's called The Road to Ann Arbor. It tells the recruiting stories of former Michigan football players. It goes back to 1968 with Reggie McKenzie, and really, some of the relationships that I built while at MGoBlog, some of the people that were around the Michigan program, Bobby Morrison mainly is the guy that really I credit for starting this book, because I sat down with Bobby, and for people who don't know, Bobby Morrison was the recruiting coordinator at Michigan forever. He worked with Bo, with Lloyd Carr, with Gary Moeller. I think he was there for almost 40 years, I want to say. He was there forever.
Okay.
And we were sitting down for a different story, and Bobby still follows recruiting to this day, which is awesome to me, because he knew everything about what was going on. And this was probably 3 years ago. We were sitting down working on something else, and afterwards he looked at me and he said, you know, the recruiting stories that you tell now, you think those are good. You should hear some of the stories that I have. And I was like, well, we're here. Let's hear some of them. And he told me Tom Brady's story.
Right.
And that's really what sparked the book, was I thought, man, if there's that kind of story out there for some of Michigan fans' favorite players, there's got to be more.
Okay, well, what is the Tom Brady story?
The Tom Brady story is incredible to me, because I've seen other people have tried to write the story. Different outlets have tried to write his recruitment. And I have anxiety anyways, and so after I wrote the book, I just sat and hoped that nobody got this story. Andy Staples wrote it. And Andy does an awesome job. I really like Andy. And we actually talked about this, that there's a different side of it that he didn't get. And so everybody knows Tom Brady was recruited by Michigan late in the process, right? And the story goes that Tom and his dad sent out a bunch of his tapes to a bunch of different schools, and Michigan didn't get around to it until late in the process. And then they started recruiting him. He eventually committed. Well, there was a reason why they didn't recruit him until late in the process, and there was another quarterback in that class. His name, without giving up the whole story, his name was Bobby Sablehouse. And Bobby Sablehouse at the time was this 6'5", just giant quarterback prospect that everybody wanted. He's from Maryland, and he was down to Florida and Michigan. Steve Spurrier was at Florida, and it was down to those two. And Bobby Sablehouse was the guy that Michigan was going after before Tom Brady. So I'll let people read the book for the rest of the how everything played out. You can imagine Tom Brady ends up at Michigan.
I do vaguely remember that.
Yeah, so Bobby – and I talked to Bobby in the book. And that was
– Spoiler, man.
that was a big thing for me with this book, is I didn't want it just to be the player's side of the story, because through writing about recruiting, following recruiting, I know that – that's usually not the whole story.
Sure.
You know, you need the whole story. So every chapter, including Tom's, I talked to Tom Brady's dad. I talked to his high school teammates. I talked to Bobby Sablehouse, some of the coaches that were involved from a couple different sides. And Bobby has an awesome, awesome side of the story. And it was cool for me for him to relive that and retell it to me. And he jokes all the time with his friends now that he gave Tom Brady his scholarship to Michigan. So.
And then he goes and cries in the bathroom.
Right, right. No, he's doing well.
He's
doing well.
Glad to hear that.
He produced a 30 for 30.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so he's in production now out of football, but he is not Tom Brady.
It must be weird. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm the same age as that guy who's
right.
Tom Brady. And I guess I'm kind of the same age as Tom Brady. It is weird. Weird being about the same age as Tom Brady.
Yeah. He was technically in one of my classes, I think.
Really?
Yeah, like... I was in a
what is technically?
Yeah, that's not good.
Ooh, well, I was in creative
did
writing.
Did you not go?
No,
or did he not go?
Seth didn't go. That's
it was
the
me.
Story.
It was me. That's the story, everybody. It was creative writing. You didn't have to go to every class. You had to like submit your stories, and we were in different groups of four, and one of the football players actually was in my group, but Brady was in someone else's group, and they're like, oh, I got Tom Brady's story. He was the starter at that point already,
sure.
too. And he's like, I don't know if I'm going to give it to them because he just lost to Illinois. So he was marking up Brady's article. People were not happy with Brady at that in that particular week. Anyway.
Regretful now.
So I think he was in my – I never saw him in class, but, like, you went to that class twice.
I think we finished this story now.
That's my Tom Brady in school story.
Is this a real-life cool story, bro? Did we
I didn't want to say it.
Right. I said it for you.
So Reggie McKenzie's in this book. Tom Brady's in this book. Who else is in it?
Yeah, I said Tom kind of sparked the book. Reggie is what fueled me to go – and really, really finish the book. Because Reggie's story, like I said, all the way back to 1968, 50 years ago, when I got a hold of Reggie McKenzie, he remembered his whole story. And he was passionate about what happened and how he was recruited and, you know, just everything that played out for him.
He had the Michigan State
He wanted to go to Michigan State. Yeah, and they didn't recruit him. They didn't think that he could play there. And then eventually, Reggie believes that race was involved, that they had signed a quota that he says there for African American players. He thought he was going to end up at Western Michigan at one point, and then George Manns from Michigan started recruiting him. And so Reggie said, "You got to get a hold of George Manns. If you can talk to George Manns, this would be great." It took me 3 months to get a hold of this guy because you can imagine he's in his 80s. He's not on Facebook and on an iPhone and easily accessible. So I finally get a hold of George Manns, and he remembered the exact same story that Reggie remembered, down to Reggie's mom's doctor that referred Reggie to George. And I stopped the conversation and I was like, George, how are you remembering all this right now? This is 50 years ago. And he said, there were certain players that I related really well to that made an impression on me. He said, you happened to call about Reggie McKenzie. That was the one guy who always stood out to me. I will always remember Reggie McKenzie. So that kind of fueled it for me to keep going. But who else is in the book? Chad Henney's in it. Braylon Edwards is in it. Desmond Howard.
I thought the Jamie Morris story was probably my favorite.
Really?
Well, because you had his brothers all went to Syracuse.
Right.
And then he thought he was going to Syracuse. He shows up to go to his Michigan interview, and Bo cancels everybody's interviews because Spielman wasn't going to come.
Yeah. And I got a hold of Chris Spielman. He has a different recollection. And I'm using air quotes for people who can't see us.
Very visual podcast.
Yeah, he's got a different recollection of what happened in that meeting. And I think John Eubakin has a book that kind of details the infamous Chris Spielman, Bo Schembechler recruiting meeting where something happened in the office. And Jamie remembers it from his perspective. He describes it as you line up outside of Bo's office, almost like you're in line to go to the principal's office, and you're sitting there waiting for your turn to go to talk to Bo. And he says, all of a sudden it gets loud in Bo's office and something's going on. He said, I don't know what happened in there, but there was some kind of argument while Chris Spielman was in there. Spielman walks out, Bo walks out and says, cancel all the meetings. And so here's Jamie Morris, who is sitting there,
who's,
you know,
5'7".
I was going to say he's my size, you know, he's my size, sitting there thinking, I don't have a shot anyways. Now I don't have a meeting. And so he went up to his hotel room, didn't know what to do. And his recruiting coach said, we'll figure it out. We'll get it figured out. Don't worry. And Jamie said bright and early the next morning, Bo called and said, come downstairs, and finally met with him and talked to him about it. And he was scared because there was a thing that I guess I confirmed with a couple assistant coaches that was a real thing, that Bo didn't like running backs with short arms. Jamie had short arms.
Jamie had short everything.
Right. He was short. Yeah. So he was nervous about the whole thing. So, yeah, his story is interesting. Jim Harbaugh is in there. I thought his was really cool.
Yeah.
I got to speak with Jim and his father and his mother. His mom had a cool anecdote for his story that they had one tape for him for his high school film, and it wasn't a VHS; it was a spool, like an actual spool. And they sent that one copy out to every coach who wanted to see it. And they obviously had a relationship with Bo from his dad working for Bo at Michigan. And they were out in California. Bo comes out, has lunch with Jim's mom, and says, "Hey, I'd like to look at Jim's tape. Do you have that?" And she laughed and said, "Oh, it's at Ohio State right now. Why don't you go get it?" And she said he just looked at her with that famous scowl, and he did not think it was funny, but she thought it was hilarious. She laughed. So I thought that was a cool story. You know, Trip Wellborn, I thought, was a really good one.
Yeah, that
too.
One was fascinating. He's the one who got snowed in, right, and just kind of, like, read the Michigan material, like,
yeah,
read the brochures instead of, like, going on his recruiting trip. And
yeah, he was from North Carolina, so he didn't think that he was going to end up at Michigan. I mean, Florida State, UCLA were really
good. Yeah, he was, like, a number two or three overall. He was, like, a Jabril Peppers of his class.
He was, you know, it was funny. I was talking with Sam Webb on his show, and he brought up Trip Wellborn and Daxton Hill, who's in this class. And I thought it was a pretty good comparison in terms of what they can do. Cause
that'd be nice.
Trip was a top wide receiver in his class, too.
Yeah.
And he played baseball. He played basketball. He was a little bit of everything. And he actually I thought his story was cool because he went into after his recruitment a lot more, too, of what happened. Because originally he was recruited as a wide receiver. They then brought him to campus. The defensive coaches wanted him. Bo brought him in and said, what would you like to do? And he said, well, I'd really like to, if I have a choice, do I have a choice? And he said, well, sure. And he said, well, if I have a choice, I'd like to play receiver. And so he said he came in the next day and in his locker was a defensive jersey. So that was his choice. But yeah, he said he his first practice on defense, he went out and knocked one of his teammates out. And that's when he knew he was a defensive player, and the rest is history. So that was another aspect of the book, too, that we tried to go a little bit further, you know, into their time at Michigan. Yeah. So.
Yes. So the sequel to this book is probably going to have Aubrey Solomon's recruitment in it.
Oh, it's got it.
It's in this.
Oh, it's in there. Yeah, we ran the – I fought with his editor to include the entire excerpt because it was, so long. He's like, you can't print – that's a big portion of the book. I'm like, yes, but you need the whole Aubrey story.
I thought that might be a little bit too soon.
That was the editor's choice, and I now that it's out, I agree with it. Initially what I wanted it to be was pre-internet, stories that people hadn't told yet, really. And so – we talked before I finished the book, my editor and myself, and they said, what if we just two current players? And so Aubrey and Rashawn are in there, Rashawn Gary.
If you can't tell, I don't have time to read books during football season.
Yeah.
I know.
I don't blame you. My cousin just asked me about podcast recommendations, and I was like, I don't have time to do that. I don't know. But, yeah, Aubrey's recruitment is great. Rashawn's is good, too, I think, because both Aubrey and Rashawn's moms were such a big part of their recruitments. And now, the pressure is off of them from keeping anything out of what they were actually thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was cool, too, to hear from their moms in the chapters of what were we actually thinking, what was actually happening. A lot of people for Aubrey thought Georgia was really in it. And she said it was actually USC that was the biggest threat. So I thought that was interesting as well.
Yeah.
Well, he chose wisely.
Yeah. Yes. I do like that it's in there because it does, you go from Reggie McKenzie to Aubrey Solomon, and there are similarities in there, and they talk about their thought processes, and through the different eras, we talk about how recruiting has changed so much, but it really just comes down to, the kids go to a school, they get a feel for the people there, they get a feel for the school, and they have a sense that they're not necessarily sharing, but, that's...
We haven't actually said the name of the book yet.
Have we?
I think I mentioned it in the beginning.
Well, say it again.
The Road to Ann Arbor.
So Google that immediately, folks.
Yes, buy it.
Hold it.
No, that is.
Ah, I gotcha.
Yeah. Hold the book, not me. That is a good point, though, I think the theme of the book for me was how there's a couple different ones of how recruiting at Michigan has changed, but how it's similar to that for a lot of these guys, it was the school that sold it for them and the relationships that they built. And I think that kind of stayed the same throughout the years.
And from a Michigan fan's perspective, there are certain things about Michigan that appeal to somebody in the 60s and appeal to somebody today too.
Right.
And I'm sure if you wrote this about USC, you would get different things that appeal to the, across a broad spectrum, but you do get to see what the players see in Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. And what they experienced on campus and how ultimately where they could have ended up and where they did end up and how I try to say it humbly that this is almost a separate side of Michigan's history too, that, Tom Brady could have ended up at Cal. Trip Wellborn could have ended up at UCLA. Mark Messner could have ended up at UCLA. How it could have changed things for Michigan.
Yeah.
All right, Tom Van Herren. The book is The Road to Ann Arbor. He's going to have a literati event in approximately an hour and a half here.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to the basketball game, that would be good to hit up.
Yeah, come on over. I'll be there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to talk to Craig Ross.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 35.Z.
Closer, a little bit closer.
35.Z?
We've
been doing this for 35 years, and we ran out of numbers because we do so many of these.
We are getting pretty old now.
That's right. Craig Ross, everybody. Craig Ross, howdy. After TK this week, was like, hey, I didn't get to do any of my basketball takes. So I'm like, hey, why don't you come over here on Friday and regale us all.
We can talk basketball. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to buy Tom's book. That was fascinating, and thanks. I'm glad I got to listen. The one thing I want to say just to start that I disagree.
You're going to go with this?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
I disagree with Brian on Ted Valentine. I know today he said he was, happy to see Ted go. But I watched basketball back in the old days.
In
the 60s. Yeah. 60s, 70s, 80s when the Big Ten was pro wrestling, and that's not a joke. And if you talk to like Don from Ann Arbor, who might remember, I don't know, I have a guess he does. Games back there, if you were on the road, it was hard to win. And there were two refs in the Big Ten, even going through the early 90s, that you had a chance to win with on the road. And one was Tom Rucker, who's long since been retired, and the other was Ted Valentine. And Valentine was not intimidated by opposing crowds, was not intimidated by opposing coaches. And I'll say this is a true story. That he called the tee on
This was in Refereeing Magazine.
This was in Refereeing Magazine. Okay. He called the tee on Knight in Indiana, at Indiana, and the crowd was going crazy, and he was afraid they were going to come after him. But Knight was still going crazy, so he was refereeing this game with Ed Hightower. This was when Ed Hightower had no hair. People may not remember that Ed Hightower had no hair, but at some point in time he got hair. And so he said to Hightower, look, you got to have my back here, that, you know, I can't let Knight do this because the integrity of the game will be gone, but these fans are going to kill me if I call another tee on him. So Hightower said, no way. I'm not letting them come after me. So when they went at halftime, they got into a fist fight in the locker room, Hightower and Valentine, and didn't
ref a lot of games.
This is the only thing that's ever made me want a subscription to Refereeing Magazine.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can find it. I think in my second book, I have the excerpt and the citation to it, because I do reference this story, and no one sued me about it. So
it's always a good start.
Yeah, always a good start. But so I have good feelings to Ted Valentine. Yeah, he is a little flamboyant. Yeah.
A little.
But so what? He still is he's at least not. Yeah, I know you think and others think that Beeline hates him.
Beeline does hate him.
I don't know if that's true or not. But even if he does, he has a place in the Big Ten. He's at least an average ref. Officiating has become good in the Big Ten. Someone in the Big Ten.
Good-ish.
Someone in the Big Ten has said, look, we should have it so if you play on the road, you don't have to win by 40 points to win by two, which is what it used to be like. And so someone in the Big Ten has changed things, and you can get fair officiating. And the reality is, I don't even know most of their names anymore, because I don't care. Because
you know some of their names.
I know some of them, because by and large they're reasonably competent, and I don't feel like there's a thumb on the scale.
So
people
have actually done this research and mm-hmm. like looked at home court advantage over the years.
It's referees.
Yeah, well, it's also dropped a couple of points, which is a big deal. So that is
despite student sections actually being built closer to the court and everything, like the psychological effect supposed to be the other way around.
Everything's on TV now, so it's tougher to
That's a point too. It's tougher to and things. I mean, KenPom. Now, if you look there, they track, I don't know if you knew this, but they track referees.
I do know that.
You know everything.
I don't know everything.
But you know that stuff.
I know everything about KenPom.com. I will cop to that.
Well, I'm a subscriber, and I love the site, but I realized last year, wow, I can see who's refereeing games. And so you can track everything, whereas in the past, you know, this was quite difficult. I want to go easy on Ted Valentine. Okay. I mean, I understand.
We have
exhausted it.
Yes, you got that off your chest.
I got it off my chest.
Your Ted Valentine dad.
Yeah, I feel better now. So you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's move on to the team.
So you want to talk about Michigan or the Big Ten as a whole or individual teams?
Let's talk about Michigan first.
Michigan is curious. The rumor is every year they play a
secret scrimmage.
And this year they played it down in Toledo. Toledo, I think he said, was 13-5 last
13-5 in the MAC.
And they have most of their team back.
They lost their high usage go-to guy. Everybody else is back.
Right. And they just demolished. I have friends, my brother's in Toledo, I have friends down there, and the talk down there is it was just a demolition.
They've never seen the like.
Yeah, they said it was, I mean, Toledo had a hard time getting a shot off, let alone making a shot. And so that's what I wasn't there, I didn't see it, but that's what I'm being told.
I mean, that's what Quinn reported, that's what Zach Shaw reported, I think that was Josh Hens.
Okay.
But most of the takes that people have gotten out of that scrimmage were very, very clear.
And in the last couple of years, that hasn't been true. I think we played poorly down at Kent State a couple of years ago. Akron, I think, gave us trouble.
They played Toledo last year. I think Toledo might have won.
Yeah.
This year they had the Spanish trip, though.
And they did not play too well in Spain.
No, but they've gotten to play together a little bit.
They've had a little bit of extra time to play together. But the Michigan team has three elite defenders, in my opinion. One super elite defender and two guys who were also elite. You've got X, and then you've got who's, I think, probably the best player on this team. And you've got Teske, and you've got Charles Matthews. And I don't know who's going to end up at the other four, or the other forward.
It'll be Iggy.
You think it'll be Ignas?
I mean, this is a team that needs to generate shots, I think, and he's a guy who will generate shots.
But Livers can shoot the three.
He can.
And so I think that's and Ignas can play the two, three, or four. He's comfortable handling the ball. He can play the two. And so they can slide him around, and I think Livers is going to get a lot of time at that forward position also. And I think I haven't seen enough Ignas to know what his defense is going to look like, but I know Livers is a pretty good defender last year. I suspect he'll be better this year. And so your only real question when you look at defense is at the two, and I don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, the two practices that have been available to me – I thought Eli Brooks was one of the better two or three players on the court, and I thought he played better than Poole all around. Now, what Eli's going to do or whether he's going to beat Poole out, who's probably the best shooter on the team, is Poole. I don't know.
The chances of someone beating out Poole are pretty slim. Like, I mean, there was a really excellent, like, scouting evaluation of Michigan's game against Mega BMAX.
One of the teams.
Yeah, and it's in-depth. I've linked it on the site. I should link it again. They were very pro pool. So, and that's like an NBA kind of scout there. So, yeah. I think he's probably progressing as people would.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I thought as of 2 weeks ago, that this was a slam dunk. I'm not quite so sure. Poole's obviously going to play and play a lot of minutes. But Eli Brooks is going to play too, and I think he's going to be in the rotation. I don't think David DeJulius, who I love, I think has a, and he reminds me of Derek Walton, but I think he's a much better half court player than Derek. I don't think anyone in the history of basketball will be the sort of 6 foot rebounder that Derek was, but I do think that he's sort of a sturdy guy who's a good ball handler, is a great shooter. But his defense, I don't think, is quite there yet. How much we'll see of him this year,
open practice, mm-hmm. there was a lot of talk. Mm-hmm. Like, Beilein was talking really a lot, and I felt like...
That was a good sign.
Well, it was a good sign for 6 months from now. It was a bad sign for the non-conference schedule. Like, there was a point at which, like, he, like, stopped everybody, called DeJulius
and
over,
took his,
turned his mic off, and then talked to him for a bit, and then sent him back out there. So it's, I think that's the guy who they expect is going to play a bunch of minutes, mm-hmm. but not maybe right away.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable prediction.
Beilein point guard is not like something you pick up right out of high school either.
Right.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I think that they're not going to have that kind of Beilein lull that they've had for large portions of his
career.
Right,
because they started over pretty much last year, even though he played a little bit.
I mean, Brooks was starting at the point guard for a while. Like, I think it took 9 games for Simpson to get a bucket from the floor.
Yep.
Or maybe that was, like, his second bucket from the floor. But there was definitely, like, a early stretch where they didn't know who their point guard was. They didn't know what they were really
doing.
There
was some sarcastic clapping in Chrysler when he finally made one.
And then there was also the February league, where one of the big things that happened is that John Teske went from an offensive liability to, like, you know, Michigan scores about as much with him on the court as they do Mo Wagner, which is, like, okay. Now we're talking about that.
I don't know if you've looked at the numbers on this or not, but I felt like Michigan was probably a better team last year when Teske was on the floor versus Wagner. I mean,
you had to prepare for Wagner all week
differently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's probably, and also, like, he's out there when the other team's backups are out there, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean. But I think, I mean, I'm a big Teske fan, and what you could see, there was a lot of noise about how X and Teske were really in tune on the pick and roll, and that's something that we haven't really seen since Darius Morris and Jordan Morgan. And and it looked like in the scrimmages that was really true.
I thought the same thing. I thought that the two-man game that they were running was something that looked like it would be very difficult to defend, because they were just really locked into each other. And, you know, Teske can finish with both hands. He can finish. He's not quite an above-the-rim player, but he's enough that, like, those finishes are probably 70. And X was making the kind of passes that, like, everybody in the crowd was going, ooh.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he might get that leap that where he's getting up to, like, a 35%, which he's coming from 25. So.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page on that. And, you know, so I think X has changed his shot. His shooting mechanics have changed.
I mean, that's...
But, I mean, whether that's going to work, he didn't make any shots from outside. But I'm hopeful that, that'll work at the free throw line. Last year, he was under 52%.
I mean, that is...
That's got to improve.
Yeah, but that was also a major improvement during last year. Like, he went from, oh, my God, he's going to miss everything, to...
I
think he went from, like, a 40% to a 60% over the course of last year.
He changed his style.
His motion.
Doing, like, the Rip Hamilton side dribble.
Yes.
And then he, like, added, like... 5 points after that, so it wasn't exactly a new day. It was an incremental improvement.
Well, I talked to him on media day, and he's an unusual guy. Beilein calls him a pit bull. I got the impression he'd almost rather eat my hand than answer a question. And I said, well, have you changed your shooting mechanics? And he said,
you just watch.
Well, watch me when I'm doing it. Okay, I can do that.
Yeah, I mean, he'll stop talking.
He's a tough guy. I mean, yeah. He's a tough guy on the court, and my impression is he's sort of a tough guy off the court too. Unlike, you know, a lot of the others. I'd like to mention a couple other guys. I mean, first of all, Brandon Johns is I think could be in the rotation this year. I know Beilein's made some noises about playing him at the five. I don't know how comfortable he's going to be at the five.
He's not very comfortable.
But he can shoot the three. He has nice shooting mechanics. He has a little bit of a left hand.
He's got more athleticism on the team other than
he's
Charles
extremely.
Matthews.
You're right, and he's an extremely fast jumper. He's not just he's very fast off the floor, which is unusual for a guy that big. And so I think I could see him. I don't think Nunez has a beautiful shot. It's a gorgeous jump shot. It looks a lot like Tim Hardaway's. In fact, he sort of looks like Tim Hardaway in his mechanics. But I don't think he can play much defense at this point, and I think he's probably a year away. But you never know. If you can make shots, there's always a chance you're going to end up on the floor. And finally, I really liked, I don't know what you thought of Colin Castleton. I thought he was a tougher guy on the court than I imagined.
He was bigger than I thought he was.
He's bigger. He's not as skinny as I thought he would be. And he's a more physical guy.
Because I remember, you know, you watch like clips of him online, and he's got like Caris LeVert arms.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, got to put this guy in the meat cellar for 3 years and then see what you got. But no, I don't think he's going to be able to play much, just because I thought Austin Davis looked like a guy who's a very viable 50.
He absolutely is. I mean, Austin Davis is physically ready to play. He's a good rebounder, and he's out of high school. He had good post moves. Someone taught him well. I think his dad might have played in Europe or and so he has very good, very advanced low post moves.
I mean, he hit a couple of like little baby hook shots over Teske in the foot practice, and that's like something that, you know, if he's going to get that position and he's going to be used from that position, he can play 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, when people went at him last year, like, he had, I think, 2 minutes at the end of the first half of a Michigan State game, and they're like, we're going right at this guy. And they didn't get anything on him. So if he's able to D up and rebound and, you know, chip in 6 points a game or something, I think that's enough to hold off guys who might have more upside but kind of farther back right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're an extremely deep team. I think that we made –
which you hate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I hate it, but I'm not sure it ever really works. And so, I mean, I've always felt like if you had your six or seven guys who weren't looking over their shoulder, that they would play.
Eight. You need eight because you need two bigs and then two guys to rotate through.
Yeah, but the teams that, I mean, I've said this before on our Thursday show, but the teams that I've felt played the closest to their potential were six and seven guy teams. And but we'll see. I mean, I don't know how this really shakes out at this point. We don't have enough data.
I mean, at most it's going to be eight. Nine guys. Like, it's probably going to be foul trouble. And it's just like, who are those eight going to be? So you're going to have the starting five, and then Liver, David, and then pick a wild card. Mm. It's Brooks, I guess.
I think it's Brooks because at least in both the scrimmages, he shot the ball very well. He's got great rotation on this jump shot. I talked to Yaklich, and Yaklich said his defense has improved a lot. So I think he can stay on the court defensively, which is important when you're going to have probably four other guys who can D up. Oh, I've got one other piece of information. Maybe I mentioned this about Ignas. I was confused. I saw his tape many years ago. In fact, I think the first...
Many years ago?
I think the first time the name Ignas Brazdeikis showed up was on our radio show maybe 3 years ago.
Okay.
And because I had watched tape of him before I knew Michigan was recruiting him. And I said, I saw him in Toronto.
Watch random tape?
I do sometimes. And I just said, this guy, he's, you know, this
Should
is.
Should I start calling him Ignas Brazdeikis as brought to you by Craig Ross?
No, I get no credit for Ignas at all. But I did talk about him.
I vaguely remember this.
Yeah, a number of years ago, three, I think. And the thing that confused me when I saw his tape and the thing I talked about that day was that I hadn't ever seen a kid that adept with his right hand and left hand.
He's basically ambidextrous. You can't tell what his
hand is. And so when I talked to Ignas last week, I asked him. He said, no, I'm right-handed.
But he shoots mostly left.
He shoots left.
Except around the basket where you can't tell. But his three is is a left-handed shot. He goes, well, I do some things left-handed, but I'm really a right-hander. And so, which I thought was pretty interesting. And
I'm like that, except I suck at all physical activities.
I didn't say
just
that.
As awful left-handed.
I bat left and I throw right. So
yeah. Okay, so yeah, he's
if you can call it either of those things.
I throw a frisbee left because I'm so bad at throwing frisbees.
But in any event, his shot is, I think the mechanics on his jump shot are pretty good, but he should live at the free throw line. And, you know, I've played a lot of basketball at very low levels, the lowest conceivable levels. And the people...
I'm conceiving of very low levels of basketball.
Yeah, when I was like 25, if I played against eight-year-olds. And so but the thing that I always found hard was that a guy around the basket who could shoot with either hand.
Yeah.
If you knew which hand he was shooting with, you could at least defend him. But it was hard not to foul a guy who had two hands. And so Ignas, I think, is going to live at the free throw line. One, he's got a pretty good first step. He's more athletic than people think. And I think he's going to get to the basket and get fouled a lot, which is something, you know, that we really haven't had on this team for a while.
He doesn't mind putting it up.
Yeah, but he's not as, you know, he's been in the practices I saw, I thought he was reasonably restrained.
I mean, he's not, he's going to be more like early Marr in that able to get to the basket. He was able to get buckets, but he was a black hole. He's not going to give you an assist rate higher than five.
He's a good passer, though.
I mean,
he is a good passer. And
his mentality is score the ball.
Is scoring, yeah. Well, we'll see how this all works out. I'm excited about this team very much. It's hard to know. Some things confuse me. I know on KenPom they rated them, they project them at number 28 on defense, which is hard for me to understand when they were only behind Cincinnati and Virginia last year.
Well,
do you have any explanation?
So those preseason rankings kind of roll in the past few years of productivity on the assumption that, you know, a good defensive team over the last three is going to be a good defensive link forward.
Okay.
And, of course, Michigan wasn't a good defensive team until last year. So the projections are still lagging there a little bit.
They weren't too bad at the prior
the
year
Donlin. The Donlin year, they were awful. And then
early.
Yeah. Well, halfway through the season, the Maverick Morgan game. Yeah. And then they had, like, another bad game after that. Then they started to tighten down.
Yeah.
But so I think they ended up 50th or something
sounds
in defense.
Right.
So... yeah, there's some stuff that it's still assuming that this is the older Michigan, even not
okay.
The new one.
Because, I don't see why this team – I mean, the guys you're losing, Mo, I mean, in particular, I guess Rockman was a pretty good defender, a decent defender.
He developed into one,
yeah.
But I don't think he was an impact guy.
He wasn't an elite defender. And so you're not really losing a ton on defense. What you're losing on this team is an offense.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's the big question. Well, can they shoot the ball?
Teske is someone who I made this projection. We did a roundtable on the show.
Okay.
I think his offensive rebound rate plus his block rate plus his steal rate is going to be higher than Mitch McGiff during his first year.
Wow.
And that's because his steal rate for a big was like 3%, which is ridiculous. Like, that is an absurdly high steal rate. That's like a guard steal rate for a guard. And his offensive rebound percentage was... Give it to me, Seth.
Sorry, I was going back to Mitch McGarry's freshman year.
It was something like 14 or 16. What was it? OREBs were 13.8. So like that's like a if he ranks nationally, if he gets enough minutes, that's like a top 50 OREB rate. And like he just needs that little bit more lift, that little bit more refinement that I think he did get in Camp Sanderson over the summer. He stayed in Ann Arbor the whole summer.
He is a shot blocker.
And yeah, his shot blocking, I don't think reflects the number of shots he's altered. So I think he's going to be an extremely disruptive presence that hopefully makes up for a little bit of the regression on offense by getting Michigan a trainer.
Yeah, I'm not sure we will regress on offense because I think the pick and roll game and you can actually play will improve. And I think the pick and pop game is not terrible with Teske. He can, he at least to 16, 17 feet, he's pretty good. Now his shot is slow. He has a slow release, but it's a solid release.
But you got to guard it.
Yeah, you got to guard it. You got to come out. He's 7'1" and his mechanics are solid. So, it's not like you can't play play pick and pop with him too because
I kind of feel like we're on the same page here where I think that Michigan is underrated. Like I feel like they're looking at the fact that, you know, you lose a couple of guys, you lose Mo Wagner, but the backbone of that defense is back, and it should basically keep on trucking at the same level they were a year ago. And if you're just okay on offense, you're still the same team you were last year.
And
that was a team.
And we didn't shoot well last year. I mean, we were, I think, one of the worst, maybe in the top worst 10 free throw shooting teams in the country.
Free throws, yes.
And from three, we were average, or slightly above average.
I mean, but from the floor, they were, I think, 56 in the effective field goal percentage. So, like, that's not vintage Beeline, but neither is it like a catastrophe.
Right.
Well, you're going to still have Z, and you're going to have Charles Matthews out there. And, like, Matthews later in the year came on when he just – you talked about, like, a guy who goes the same way. When he learned how to shoot left or go left, like, that improved his too. But, like, you're still going to be kind of limited by those guys as long as they're on the floor.
So, to me, the thing about Matthews is you need to get his usage down to
– Yeah.
So, last year he was a 25% usage guy. And Michigan had a lot of late clock stuff where it's like, go try to do something, Charles. And that's just not his game. You know, if he's coming into a possession and someone throws him the ball and he's got a positional advantage against a defender, he's excellent at exploiting. But, like, as a guy who's going to drive the lane, that's not his game. Now, Michigan has someone who can do that now. So, I feel like he's going to be the late clock guy. And Matthews is going to be someone who is a very efficient 18 to 20%. And that's going to be a big benefit.
Yeah, that's one of the things from last year too. That, you know, they had in Mario, you had a guy who was a late bad idea kind of guy.
Yeah.
And you know they need to replace that. I don't know if Poole could be that this year.
Poole flashed that too. Like, I think he's going to be able to get to the bucket some too. Like, he had a couple of nice takes, and those guys are not.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And Poole can take the ball to the basket. There's no doubt. You know, so it's a really interesting team. How it all fits together is hard to say exactly right now for me, but I think it'll be good.
There's only so bad a Beeline offense can be. And I feel if the pick and roll chemistry that Teske and Simpson have suggested that they have is a real thing, and they can make a big chunk out of their offense out of that, and you get another chunk from Poole, and you get another chunk from Ignis, and you get another chunk from Charles Matthews, I think the offensive concerns are probably a little bit overblown, and I feel like this team should be the clear favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I actually am I'm surprised. I'm at the same spot. I think this is probably a better team than Michigan State.
They'll be good. It's strange to me that they're like a top 10 team in like ranking stuff like that. It's just
they have some depth issues there too.
They're going to start Goins, and he's like a 10% usage guy. The guy who's going to come on the floor with Bridges gone is probably Matt McQuaid, who was 13% usage a year ago. And when you have usage that low, like, you can't. It's really hard for you to get it up to even 18. So they're going to be relying really, really heavily on Cassius Winston. Yeah. And I actually looked this stuff up on Torvik. Bart Torvik has a great site.
Yeah.
And last year, Michigan State played 9 top 50 teams. And both Winston and Nick Ward saw their offensive efficiency collapse. And I kind of feel like that's what it's going to be like night in and night out for those guys, because one of the things that makes a top 50 team a top 50 team is they have defense that is able to contain Jaren Jackson and contain Miles Bridges and then kind of force that to the second and third and fourth options. And they couldn't handle the increased workload.
Yeah,
I don't know if Langford right now is a first option or McQuaid or Nick Ward. I mean, they're really not.
Ward's going to be able to beat up on a lot of teams. Like, if you don't have a guy who can hold himself in the post, like, if, you know, Ward's going up against Juwan Morgan, that ends one way. But, like, Teske ate him up last year, so I'm not too scared of Nick Ward against him.
Yeah, I think Michigan State is a good team, but I don't think they're probably as good a team as Michigan right now.
It feels like they're like a 7. I mean, Izzo has defied expectations many a time, so. But that's the thing they have going for it.
They might have had, like, a few too many NBA players on the team last year, too. Like, no one.
That's what he thought. That's why Ben Carter was playing against Syracuse.
But he screwed it all up. I mean, like, if you were using those guys correctly, absolutely. That can help. But
I mean, do you have any explanation for the Jackson Ben Carter thing in the.
I can
tell you what Izzo told the media afterwards.
Well, I don't remember.
They thought he'd be better in the middle of the zone. So they thought he was a better passer and ignored the fact that he had, like, finits all season. So it's one of the strangest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's just strange. It made no sense, and I haven't heard anybody make any sense out of it yet. But.
And then, like, I don't really know if there's anyone else in the league that I look at, and I'm like, this is definitely be a very good team.
Well, you know, there's a, I would say there's a lot of teams in the league that are actually pretty good, and it's hard to know what to make of them because they've all got gaps and holes, and they've got pieces coming in like grad transfers that you don't quite know how they're going to translate.
You mean like Ohio State?
Well, I'm thinking Northwestern. That you know, for example, who has two really nice players in Vic Law and Derek Pardon. Derek Pardon is a better player than people think. He's an undersized center, but he's
all right.
Yeah, but they've got a couple of grad transfers in. One coming from BC, and
the BC guy was a role player, and then the other guy is coming from Evansville.
Yeah, and he can make baskets though. He's a shooter.
Well, you know, he took 41% of Evansville shots last year, and scored 21 points.
He was a 38-39% guy from three. You know, they don't have a point guard though, and
it's going to be that guy. His name's Ryan Taylor.
Ryan, and he's really not a point. So I don't. You know, he can shoot the ball. So, I mean, they're sort of awkward. You got Minnesota, whose whole team was hurt last year.
Minnesota's going to be bad.
Well, they got Jordan Murphy. They got
Amir Coffey,
who Michigan recruited very hard.
Their point guard is Isaiah Washington, though.
That's
super inefficient.
That's the problem. They have that, McBrayer guy. And they've got
just guys.
Well, they're not just guys. They actually have four pretty good guys on that team, but they don't have a point guard that sort of.
And also Richie Pitino is their coach. So
yeah, that's
how much faith do you have in that guy?
Not much in Richard Pitino. but Dupree McBride and Eric Curry I like on that team. So they've actually got
Minnesota is like the last team I thought you'd be pumping up as a potential surprise team.
Nebraska would be the one that
that's not a surprise because everyone has them in the top three or four. Most people have them in the top three or four because of Isaiah Roby and James Palmer, who are good players. I mean, Roby is a really nice player. I think Brian likes Roby.
Yeah, I like Roby a lot. He's a switchy five who can shoot. They need to get him a little bit more involved. I think they're going to be good. And I mean, my weird pick is Iowa.
Yeah, they
because Iowa was abominable on defense last year. They returned virtually everybody.
Everyone.
If they just spend the offseason being like mediocre at a 2-3 zone, their offense was 20th in the country last year, 19th, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a lot of guys going from freshmen to sophomores, and if they can just, like, be regular crappy at defense, like, if they can be as, like, bad at defense as, like, Beeline's teams were when they were bad, where they were, like, 90th or 100th in the country, they will make the tournament easily.
Yeah, and I think Tyler Cook is a really nice player there to go with Bohannon and
Garza.
Luke Garza, who looks like
who's Mo. Like, he just needs to shoot a little bit more from three, and he's Mo.
Yeah, he reminds me more, and just the way he looks and plays, of Kevin McHale.
Kevin McHale?
Well, okay, he's never mind. And they've got a kid in who's a nice shooter out of high school. I've seen a little bit of tape of him, Joe Weiskamp. He's a really...
You're watching tape of Iowa recruits?
I've seen that, yeah. And Joe Weiskamp is a really good shooter, and I think he might be the all-time leading scorer in the state of Iowa.
Do you ever think about getting a hobby? Is this your hobby?
This is my hobby.
Okay. You're not going to do any whittling or anything?
No, I actually have a job, too.
I'm just saying...
If you could teach me how you freeze time to watch film and, like, do all this...
Well, I don't watch a lot of film, but I pick and choose stuff, and occasionally you find things and that interest you. And
supposed to be working on our book.
I've got another version out that I got to send to you. All right, but the I agree with you. I like Iowa, but I don't know. They were really terrible on defense last year, and I'm not sure that
they were so bad. I feel like they had to come to Jesus, and I feel like that's what.
I mean, if there's a team that might be a surprise team for me, it would be Wisconsin because Happ is a tremendous player, and Davison is a tremendous player, and those two guys. And they've got most of the rest of their guys back, I think.
They don't have a lot of...
Very hateable guys.
They get a couple of guys back off injury, too. So.
Yeah.
But I think people expect a Wisconsin rebound, and people might not expect.
And they're well coached. I think, people don't like Guard. I think Guard's a good coach. I mean, I think that Wisconsin could be pretty good. And I don't think there's anybody in the Big Ten who's terrible.
Except Rutgers.
Except Rutgers, who can't. They can't shoot.
Are we talking about the
Penn State? Penn State could be pretty bad too.
Yeah,
Penn State could be bad.
They lost Carr. They have Reeves back. They have a couple
Reeves
guys,
and they've got. They have another nice player there.
Watkins is their center, but he injured himself in the Michigan game right at the end of the year. Like, there's some question about how
Lamar Stevens is back, and he Lamar Stevens was the MVP of the NIT. He's not a bad player. I think didn't they win the NIT last year?
They either won or lost in the final.
Yeah, and Stevens was the MVP of the tournament, and those three guys are pretty good. Now again, I don't know what they've got
in the pipeline,
and I don't know if they've got a point guard. I mean, they've got a couple of guys that are. They've got a great name player, Miles Dredd.
That's good.
Miles Dredd. What's his name there? The coach said he was, quote, doughy. I'm not quite sure what doughy means, but
you
I don't think
it's means.
Good.
It's bad.
And,
I'm doughy. Let's just put it.
And but the coach also said they have a freshman coming in. I think his name is Rashard Burton, who's a point guard who may start there, and he's raving about this dude. So I'm thinking that Penn State might be okay in the middle of the conference. And, you know, KenPom has, I think, 12 Big Ten teams in the top 40.
Yeah, it's going to be the random kind of mediocre conference, and then a couple teams will probably emerge.
I think Northwestern is going to implode. That's my hot take of the offseason.
You know, why did Donlin go there?
He had a family thing.
Oh, it was a family thing.
Yeah.
So that's near. So
because
he made that
it seemed like sort of a bad side.
I think it worked out for all parties.
Worked for us. I mean, yeah. I love Yaklich. So.
But yeah, I don't think people like Collins, and I think that they were really reliant on McIntosh last year. So I don't know what they go into.
All right,
now.
We got to take a break.
Okay.
We got to come back. We're actually going to talk about some football.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 35.Z, live from the Bow Store on Main Street. We should probably thank our sponsors.
That's right.
Our sponsors are Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Hannah Hummus.
It's them. And it's 4.8, so you got a little further away.
4.8?
Yeah.
I keep saying the same thing, though, so I feel like we have a new number
35.Z or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good one.
35.X.
So Penn State. Should we?
Are we going to Penn State or are we doing Michigan State first?
We can do a little bit of Michigan State recap. The defense, the Lurkey was hurt, obviously, but they were kind of fortunate that was the case because otherwise he was going to throw three picks.
Yeah.
So
well, there was like one where I think you called it pulling the string, and I think that was perfect.
I mean, it's hard to tell because he was just so off on so many other passes. So was that him realizing that he was about to throw a pick six and
one of them?
At
I was
the last
pretty
second?
Sure he was, yeah, because like it was a trap coverage. So I was writing my article on that. Yeah. So I was like looking at that one carefully. I'm like, oh man, they should have got this. Oh, wait a minute, no, he saw it and he moved the ball at the last second.
I don't know about that. Well, I mean, maybe.
All right.
So there wasn't really...
It's hard to get in his mind.
So there wasn't really a whole lot, I think, to take from that game and apply it forward that we didn't already...
I don't care.
From the defense.
It was so dominant. It was dominant against a rival, and, like, sometimes you step back from our, you know, our look deep down in things and, like, hey, we knew this already.
2 weeks ago. Like, now we gotta move on.
All right, moving on.
So the one thing I did think is that it was interesting that the defensive tackle rotation was essentially five guys taking the exact same amount of snaps. Mm-hmm. And Dwumfor was pretty much limited to rush.
Passing downs. Yeah.
And the other four guys rotated through. And Aubrey Solomon continues to flash that ability that we're hoping maybe takes this defense up another tiny eight. We get down. So that was the defensive takeaway. The offensive takeaway was, what a blowout in terms of RPS. So I think I had Michigan plus 11, which is huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, concerns about Shea Patterson, I think, are a little bit warranted because there were a couple of situations in this game where I thought he had pretty clear opportunities to score touchdowns. And it didn't happen. That said, you know, he's very accurate. He's obviously bringing another element to Michigan's ground game. Like his DSR in this game was, which downfield success rate was 55%, which is not good. But, you know, his ability to pick up 36 yards on the ground didn't just give Michigan 36 yards on the ground. It also opened up a successful 4-minute drive, probably the most successful in the history of the Harbaugh era.
Yeah.
Where they get nine plays off, they pick up two first downs, and if Andrew Stuber doesn't pick up a false start on the third series, they get a third first down, and they just kill that game. And a lot of that was Shea Patterson's legs demanding respect.
And how long – well, there was a fourth and two especially where I think that was maybe a response to earlier in the game where he wasn't keeping it, and they dove everybody down inside, and he's walking – even the cameraman was fooled by that.
And now, like – I think that is going to be closed off going forward. Like the ability to pull on fourth and two and pick up an easy 15 yards is not something teams going forward are going to allow, but is going to open up other stuff.
Right. That makes belly a lot more better. Makes zone read better, and it actually makes your play action better off of it.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that Harbaugh was able to do a little bit at Stanford and Colin Kaepernick, where it's like, this guy's only going to carry it six times a game, but it has a disproportionate impact on the rest of your offense when you have to make him play a little bit on a left.
So I think the big question that I had coming out of, or after reading your UFR, is are our tackles...
I don't know yet. We'll know after this
weekend. I mean, this game is a really... this is almost a final exam.
So Bushel Beatty did pick up, I think, five pass pro minus. One of them was bad, like a minus two, and then there were some scattered, like he kind of let the guy around, but it didn't blow up the play.
I don't expect him to become a good pass protector again.
I mean, I was really impressed with Kenny Wilkes. Mm-hmm. Like, I went into this game, and I'm like, I don't know how good this guy actually is. He's very good.
Oh, yes. Yeah. When my scouting of him, I was like, this guy is going to – he's going to be the one problem on their defense.
And he was a problem. But he wasn't really a problem for John Runyon. And I don't know if that was because they just decided that the Bushel Beatty matchup was the – but, you know – the big Kern Higdon run where he breaks a tackle in the backfield, That's a 38-yard run because John Runyon comes off the line of scrimmage, doubles a defensive tackle, drives him back, pops off on a linebacker, and that linebacker goes for a donkey ride. And I looked at it, and I was like, is that Taylor Lewan? No, it was John Runyon. And I'm like, he might be good.
Yeah.
I don't,
and he didn't gain 6 inches and look 30 years older or anything. So.
I mean, the thing that Penn State presents is they have 3 very good pass rushing.
Yes, they do.
And
the one we thought was going to be really good at the beginning of the season is like the 3rd best.
Right. And so it's possible that Runyon was not exposed to Willekes because they decided that they wanted the Bushel Beatty matchup. And against Penn State, it's going to be difficult for Michigan to throw it all because both tackles are going to be under stress on every passing play. That said, if John Runyon survives this game against Penn State, he is officially legitimately good.
If he survives in this game, I'm putting stars on his turn.
Wow.
And he started as like the most obvious sign circle in the history of my stupid graphics.
Yeah. They're not stupid.
Well, okay. They're cool.
People like them. There's like shirts with them. Yeah.
there are shirts with them now. All right.
So I mean, is there anything else really from the Michigan State game on the offense that we need to talk about?
I think the offensive lines coming together and like being able to have a 4-minute drive where you're just bashing guys off the ball, a good defensive line off the ball. I mean, I felt more confident after Michigan State that we could go into Ohio State and play those guys.
Oh, there is one thing.
Yeah.
So the double A gap blitz. Killed.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing that happened 2 years ago when Mason Cole was at center.
Yes.
And then last year, not so much. This year, back to it, you know, they give up a pressure the first time they run it on the first snap
ball, yeah.
Every other play on which a double A gap blitz happens, it's either irrelevant or Michigan successfully blocks it and defeats it.
And State kept running it long after it was clear Michigan had.
It wasn't getting annihilated. It was like Michigan would pick up 6 yards or 9 yards.
No,
or
Michigan
4
picked
yards.
It up and they kept on doing their offense, but they were ready for it. It was Michigan definitely practiced it, knew it was coming, and knew how to respond to it.
So that was part of the fact that Michigan had a huge RPS blowout. I think you replay this game and Michigan is putting up an average of 35 points, not 20. And man, that would have been nice.
I mean, there were definitely points in this game where I was thinking of the ghosts, especially when their punter.
Yeah.
we don't need to rehab.
All right, Penn State.
Yes.
So
they need to catch the ball.
They're a weird team.
They've been playing a lot of rain games. That's kind of I think that's one of the secret things they're going at because like they have like the highest drop rate
in the country
for their receivers, and I think a lot of that is rain, and I think a lot of that too is that Mick Surley likes to put it up and give them a chance to catch the ball.
There have absolutely been
some drops.
You get to wear some gloves, you know. Like, I don't know if rain is like that.
It definitely makes it. It matters because the passes are not as crisp, and you don't have as good a footing, so you're not like making your double. You're not going for double moves. You're just trying to like get out into your route. Like, it definitely has an effect on offense.
Sure, I'm not saying it doesn't, but there's also like, you know, you're more open because the defensive backs can't cut. And so, anyway.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of guys on this team who have very poor catch rates.
Yeah, and some of them are just because they're bad at it. Like Brandon Polk is one of the 5'9 guys that they have lots of. Yeah. And
well, even KJ Hamler's catch rate is 55%. And that's probably because he's 5'9.
he's not even 5'9.
Well, and they're targeting him downfield because they don't really have the guys that they've had for, you know, the last 5 years where it's just like, I am 6'4". I'm Godwin, I'm Allen Robinson, I'm Gesicki, I'm just a jump ball magnet. And they don't have that guy. I mean, they have a guy who they were hoping was going to be that guy.
Juwan Johnson, yeah.
But he can't get over the top of anybody.
No, and he's responsible for a lot of the drops.
Right.
So he's the guy I'm kind of thinking of when I say, like, McSorley tries to put it up to have him go get it, and those are always like, oh, it hit his hands and it falls down.
So McSorley's lost, I think, a yard and a half, approximately, yards per attempt this year.
Yeah.
And this is not the kind of, like, whiz-bang offense it was last year. I mean, they don't have Barkley. They don't have Moore, but I think it's more head.
Yeah.
But I think it's more just the receiving core just isn't up to it.
McSorley is the real deal. He's a very good quarterback.
Yeah, he's legit. Like, I had my skepticisms last year, and then he just kept slot fading us to death, and I was like,
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, it's not just his accuracy, and it's not just his legs. He is a really good zone reader, which is an underrated talent. He is. He knows. You've watched Shea Patterson all year.
Reader of zones.
You know how important a reader of zones can be if he can get it right every time, and he does. I think I and they base their offense around that. So everything's a zone read or a run pass option or a run screen option, and it's always him making those reads. And I think I got him twice in a game filled with that, making the wrong read.
Well, and so his legs have been kind of the way that Penn State has propped their offense up. He gets 25 carries in the Ohio State game.
He has more he had more carries in these two games that I watched than the running backs.
He has 19 carries against like 13 and 12 in the other two games. And that's how they're keeping their offense afloat. And that's a problem because he goes out of the Iowa game with a knee injury. And he comes back and he runs for a 51-yard touchdown. But just the vibe coming out of Penn State practice this week is weird, man.
The guy is he's had injuries in the past that he's played through.
I know, but this is kind of the thing. Like, if you're going to run him 25 times in this game, he might not make it through it.
I think that if you're going to run him 25 times against Michigan's defense, I think Michigan's defense is going to shut him down. Like, you can't do the things that you can do against Michigan State against Michigan.
Well, I mean, Michigan State has a really good run defense.
They have a good but
and they so. If you look at Miles Sanders, mm-hmm. like his last four games, he gets the two big runs against Michigan State, one of which is admittedly awesome. Like, he breaks a bunch of tackles and he scores a touchdown. I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. The other one was a freebie because Michigan State failed to fit a gap and they were in a nickel and he just ran untouched for 50
Which, another point
yards.
Towards McSorley, he's the one who pointed it out. He saw the linebacker out where no one can, where he can't really do anything with either blitz or cover a guy.
Well, but that's, I mean, he's got a... Michigan State was in a gap sound defense.
Yeah.
They just didn't fit the gap. So that's an error that we haven't seen Michigan make this year, and something that if you look at like Miles Sanders' past four games, those are really his only runs that are big successes. And so he's averaging like 2.7 yards an attempt against Ohio State. He's averaging 4.5 yards an attempt against and 3.7 against Iowa. And now Michigan's defense is coming in.
Yeah.
And like he might break
and
off.
Had an extra week to prepare.
Right. And has an angry down on camera.
Right.
So like he's talent. Like he's a former five star. He's obviously got something to it. But the Penn State ground game is kind of put together. It's jury rigged. It's got a lot of duct tape on it. And I don't know if
they run a lot of plays that are Joe Moorhead plays. And when you watch them, when they come out, you're like, ooh, that's a kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily know how to build off of it like they used to. Like,
right.
Moorhead was the one who really knew how to
iterate those concepts.
Yeah, and he would set you up and then just screw you with it. And Don Brown even like admitted, I think, last week that he let himself fall into the traps that Moorhead set for him.
Well, so their first big run with Barkley last year. So their first play is a pass, and Rashawn Gary almost gets to McSorley.
Right.
And then they have their left tackle pass set, and Rashawn Gary runs himself entirely out of that play. Just the tiniest little tweak, a little thing that only is going to work that once, but it was a 70-yard touchdown because of that, and that kind of spark, you don't really see it in Penn State's offense this year.
And they invented that kind of like, you know, step zone read option, then you do a pitch option the other way. And last year that was kind of... We saw that against Michigan for the first time, and it got Michigan for a bunch of yards. And then they run that, you know, four times.
Wait, you're not talking about the inverted. Like,
No. The
Quan gun?
Yeah.
Not the Quan gun.
So the other thing that they do this year is they have a package they call the Lion Package, which, okay, yeah, you know, everyone's got
I
cool
get it.
Name.
I get it.
Lions. So... they
that's pretty clever.
Aren't they clever? So they bring in Tommy Stevens, the backup quarterback, who we should talk about anyway because that gives them another dimension. But he comes in as like a wide receiver, tight endy kind of thing. And sometimes he passes it. Sometimes he lines up under center and McSorley gets the pass. And that has actually been weirdly effective when they use it, even though the plays don't seem that like difficult to script.
Sure.
But anyway, I think he's more important because he's like that rarity in college football, a backup quarterback who's a redshirt junior, has been in your system a long time, who runs the same similar kind of player. As
I compared him to Kenny Guyton for Ohio State, where it's just nobody has that luxury anymore.
I remember saying that. That's a good comparison. Yeah. But that's perfect comparison. He's the guy that lets you ball out with your starter because you're confident if you have to put Tommy Stevens in, you're fine. And that happened against... Yeah.
But so this is a team that doesn't really complete a lot of passes. They're really bad in third and long. They end up in third and long quite a bit.
Yep.
It just feels like if they're going to score, say, 21 points in this game, they're going to get two huge plays. They're probably going to be from Miles Sanders, and then Michigan throws a pick six. Like, it's difficult for me to see them sustaining a lot of drives because their run game is real hit and miss. They can get some big chunks, but eventually they're going to be in third and long, and Michigan is the top sack team in the country in third and long.
Yeah, one thing they don't have right now, they don't have a go-to guy. So they have KJ Hamler, who is, you know, you can get something out of him, and he's fast.
Right.
But, like, if teams are expecting it to go to him, you're not going to get the
ball. Well, and if you're trying to hit him 15 yards downfield, he's not a great target for
exactly.
that.
Exactly, yes. So the guy that they try to do that with is Pat Freiermuth, who might be injured, too, this week.
He went out.
Yeah, but he's a true freshman tight end. Will probably be good.
Better blocker than Gesicki.
Better blocker than Gesicki, yeah.
But he's also a guy with like a 50% catch rate. Everybody on this team.
Because he's a true freshman.
I'm saying is like if you're relying on these guys to move the chains, like you're going to move them a little bit, but then you're going to
Yeah. And the other thing is, I don't think their offensive line has come along as far as I thought it would by this point.
That is kind of the strange thing is that, you know, Michigan's defensive tackles got beat up in this Penn State game last year. Probably more than they did in any other game on the season.
Right.
And that really has not translated to kind of like a down-in, down-out ability to move the ball in little chunks.
And they only lost one guy off that offensive line.
Yeah, it's just strange.
Yeah, and they replaced him with like a five-star or, well, high four-star freshman.
So, yeah, I mean, that was my main concern when I was looking at this team is that maybe their interior line can go